All right, you're listening to Radio Naturopath here on WHUS 91.7 FM. I am Fran Storch, and this is a call-in talk show about health and natural medicine. I'm a naturopathic physician, and I have this neat co-host, Ron Manizza.
Hey there, Franny.
If you'd like to participate in the conversation about natural medicine, you can call us at 860-486-9487. That's 860-486-9487. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check our podcast at www.whus.org. Go to the talk header and click on Radio Naturopath. You can also check out my Facebook page, Fran Storch ND, Naturopathic Physician, Radio Naturopath, on Twitter and Instagram, at Fran Storch ND. So for the next hour, you'll be getting all kinds of good natural medicine about all sorts of cool stuff. And right now, I thought I'd do something cool. So we would love for you to participate in the conversation. So if you have a question, do write us at radionaturopath@gmail.com or do call Ron. Ron will pick up the phone and call him at 860-486-9487, and we'd love to hear from you. As long as you're not doing that, I'm going to talk about the ABCs.
So ABCs?
What ABCDEFG?
I know those ABCs. What ABCs are you talking about, Fran?
So I thought I'd go through the vitamins and tell you why they're good.
Oh, yeah. Like vitamin A, vitamin B, vitamin C.
Yeah. So I'm going to start with vitamin A.
Cool.
Yeah.
What you got?
So vitamin A is good for you.
Okay. Why is it good for me?
So vitamin A.
Are you leading me into these questions?
I just thought I'd see where we went with that.
Oh,
so
okay.
Anyway, vitamin A is really good for you. That's so
okay.
Silly.
It's silly.
It's a fat-soluble vitamin. So the interesting thing about vitamin A is vitamin A has actual vitamin A, retinol, and it also has its precursors. So the actual vitamin A is only found in animals. Animals convert carotenoids, beta carotene, into vitamin A, and beta carotene is found in plants, mm-hmm. whereas vitamin A is found in animal substances. So when people tell you that, for example, that sweet potatoes are high in vitamin A, it's not exactly correct. Nor is it correct to say that leafy greens are high in vitamin A. They really aren't. There really is no vitamin A in them. There's beta carotene in them, and in carrots as well. There's not actually vitamin A in carrots. There's beta carotene in carrots. And, you know, carotene comes from carrot. That's how that kind of works, right?
Yeah.
Because carrots are incredibly high in beta carotene. It's probably one of the highest source foods for beta carotene that you can get.
We eat them every day.
Yeah, we eat lots of carrots.
We do.
And they're good for eye health. And the first thing you think about with vitamin A, so what you need in your eyes is actually vitamin A. But if you have a well-functioning system, if you have a well-functioning digestive system, you're going to successfully convert your beta carotene to vitamin A. And then vitamin A is part of the process of producing rhodopsin and producing the cones in your eyes. You actually need them for the production of those cells in your eyes. So they really do improve your vision. It's especially for the rods in your eyes because one of the things you notice if you have a vitamin A deficiency is that you reduce your night vision. So the cones and rods in your eye are somewhat different. The cones in your eyes help you to see color, whereas the rods in your eyes, the rods in your eyes help you to see shades. So they help you to see grays and blacks and then shades of different colors. So your night vision will get worse if you're low in vitamin A. So if your night vision is worsening, that's not the only thing that can cause a worsening in night vision, but definitely a reduction in vitamin A. If you're not eating your veggies, or if you're not eating healthfully, or if you have a malabsorption syndrome of some kind, your night vision, one of the things that can happen is you'll notice a drop in your night vision. You will get a drop in your night vision if you have other eye problems, like macular degeneration can cause that, cataracts can cause that, glaucoma can cause that, so any kind of eye degenerative disease can cause that. But if you are pretty sure you don't have any of those, your ophthalmologist hasn't mentioned those to you, and you want to improve your night vision, you might check into consuming more foods with vitamin A in them. So actual vitamin A is going to be found in animal foods. So you're going to get vitamin A from organ meats and from eating meat and poultry and stuff. If you're vegetarian and you don't want to get it that way, then you have to get it from, you have to hope that you are converting your beta carotene into vitamin A well. And so sometimes what we do is, so for people who are vegans who don't eat any animal protein at all and they need vitamin A for some reason, it can be converted by microorganisms from beta carotene to vitamin A. So you can get vegan sources of vitamin A. But if you just eat food, you're not, that's not necessarily going to happen. And so just from eating food, if you want to get actual vitamin A, you're going to get it from animal sources. And if you're going to get beta carotene, you're going to get it from plant sources. So carotenoids, how do you know that stuff has carotenoids in it? Because carotenoids are pretty colors. So think about the leaves on the trees, right? You know how in the summertime, in the spring and the summer, leaves are green. Why are they green? They're green because they make chlorophyll, and chlorophyll is green. Chlorophyll is this cool compound that is this basically the same compound as hemoglobin in our blood, except that in the center of chlorophyll, there's a magnesium atom, and in the center of hemoglobin, there's an iron atom, and one's is red and one's is green. So chlorophyll is the green one. And so what happens in the fall when you have the changing colors is that trees can sense the change in the temperature. They can also sense the change in the light. And I think the change in the light is actually more salient. When the days start getting shorter, the trees go, "Up, oh, that's it. We're going to start toning things down, and we're going to stop sending nutrition to the leaves, and we're going to cut off the leaves from their energy sources and from their sap." So what happens is trees start to power down, and as they're starting to power down, they're not sending nutrition, that they're cutting off the circulation basically to the leaves. So as this is happening, the leaves no longer can make chlorophyll. And what you see instead, when the chlorophyll goes away, what's revealed is the carotenoids underneath. So maple leaves have carotenes in them. That's why they're that color. And all of the leaves that you see, or even when you leave your kale in the fridge for too long, the chlorophyll starts to degenerate and your kale turns yellow. Well, guess what? That's a carotenoid. And there's lutein in kale. And lutein, it's called lute because lute is Latin for yellow. And so that's nice, so that there's lutein in kale, and that's part of what colors kale yellow when the chlorophyll goes away. So anyway, lutein and zeaxanthin are also carotenoids, and they're very good for your eyes. But beta-carotene is the one that's going to get converted to vitamin A. And you have to have a well-functioning digestive system, first of all, to absorb vitamin A, and also to absorb beta-carotene, and then to convert beta-carotene to vitamin A. So if you have a leaky gut, or if you have celiac disease, or if you have poor digestion for any reason of any kind, you could have difficulties absorbing your vitamin A. Also, if you eat a very low-fat diet, if you don't eat a lot of fat, this is one of the reasons a low-fat diet may not be the best thing for people. I mean, I know there are plans out there where they talk about eating low fat, and there's that vegetarian plan, Campbell and Esselstyn, who want you to do a very low fat diet. When you put your fat too low, it's going to be harder to absorb fat soluble foods. So you have to eat some fat. And what Campbell and Esselstyn do is that they have you eat no extruded fat. So they don't have you having coconut oil. You don't get to eat olive oil. You get to saute things in water. So the only fats you're going to get are going to be from your nuts and seeds and from your actual foods. And quite frankly, that is the way that hunter-gatherers used to eat. Although hunter-gatherers ate meat, they didn't have a thing about being a vegetarian or not. They were kind of like, all right, if I've got a deer that's down, I'm going to eat it. But, in later years, I have to say, now this is going to be controversial, but I'll just say it. Becoming a vegetarian is kind of a luxury because it's because you have to have an abundant supply of vegetables, nuts, seeds, fruit. You have to have abundant supplies of those things in order to be a healthful vegetarian. And the hunter-gatherers back in the day, they didn't care.
Right.
They just ate.
Right.
They didn't have a judgment about whether something was an animal or not. And that came later when we had, you know, higher cortical functioning, and when we had civilization, where you could make decisions like that, where
right.
you could say, well, hey, maybe it's not so compassionate to eat an animal or to kill an animal and eat it. And so to be a vegetarian, I don't want to say it's a luxury, like, you know, you have to be a rich person to be a vegetarian. I don't mean it that way.
To a certain degree. I mean, vegetables are not cheap if you're looking for good vegetables.
That's a really good point. That's one of our contentions, is that
right.
That grain in this country is subsidized.
We don't subsidize good food here in this
country.
We only subsidize bulk food.
Right. We subsidize grains. That's mm-hmm. right. We subsidize wheat. We subsidize corn.
And dairy.
And mm-hmm. we don't subsidize produce. Produce is seen as a luxury item.
Right.
So
exactly.
to be a really healthy vegetarian, if you are a carbotarian, you eat mostly starchy carbs. As a vegetarian, you're not going to be nearly as healthy as if you eat mostly vegetables. So unfortunately, to be a really healthful vegetarian, it's something of a luxury. And because the thing is, when you eat animal protein, you get very concentrated nutrition. And you get some of these vitamins in the form that they're used in the bodies, because the animals have converted them there. You don't need as much to be able to convert your beta carotene to vitamin A if you're eating animal protein. And this is not a judgment. I'm not saying to vegetarians, don't be a vegetarian. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just presenting some science to you. It's just kind of the way it is. So anyway, vitamin A, I talked to you about that you could have poor eye health if you don't have enough vitamin A. Your eyesight you could have wrinkling eyes. You can have cloudiness. Corneas can get soft. They can rupture. Vitamin A is very beneficial to the skin. If you don't have good vitamin A, your skin is not going to work as well. Vitamin A is part of normal cell differentiation. So if you don't have good vitamin and enough vitamin A, your skin cells can't develop as well. So it can affect your skin texture. You can have more rashes. So I'd like all of you, if you're not driving a car, go ahead, take your hand and rub the outside of your arm. All right? So can you see me rubbing the outside of my arm on the radio?
I can see it. Pull the radio, the microphone a little closer.
People
can see that.
So rub the outside of your arm. If you are one of those people where you feel little bumps, okay? Remember when we met?
Yeah, you found bumps on me.
I found the little bumps, right? Yeah. And I said, you have food allergies, right?
Right, you did.
That's funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, those little bumps are called, they're not serious. It doesn't mean you're going to die. It's not a serious condition at all. It's not going to hurt you. And some people have varying degrees of those bumps. Some people have really rough skin on the outside of their arms. And if you have it pretty bad, you might have it on your legs too. And usually it shows up on the arms and the legs more than on the torso. I haven't really seen this condition on the torso so much. So this condition is called keratosis pilaris. And like I said, it's not a big deal. It's a little inflammation of your hair follicles. And if you have inadequate vitamin A and also inadequate essential fatty acids, you'll tend to have that happen. So I look at people who have those, and I have to talk to them about their nutrition. And if they have a malabsorption where they're not able to absorb those things as well, I have to talk to them about their diet. Both in that we need to reduce the inflammation in their diet so that they can absorb their nutrients better, as well as having to eat more of those foods. So we might supplement them with essential fatty acids like fish oil. We might supplement them with vitamin A or beta carotene, depending on their preference and depending on what we're trying to do. You can also do things topically. And, you know, if you have that keratosis pilaris, what's actually going on is you're getting a little inflammation of those hair follicles. They're doing a little abnormal developing. You get some more vitamin A in there, and they'll tend to calm down. But also what happens is, because they're becoming inflamed, you get bacteria on your skin going munch, munch, munch. And so if you do a little exfoliating and scrubbing, you can get rid of some of that. I have to point out that if you have an area of your body that has a microbe problem,
mm-hmm.
Scrubbing is more the issue than whatever you use to scrub. So one of the...
What do you mean? I mean, I'm missing something there.
So for example, if you want to keep your hands clean because you want to wash your hands because you're trying to prevent infections.
Right.
So you can use hand sanitizer, or you can use soap, or you can just use water. It's a good idea to use some hand sanitizer or soap, but the idea there is the scrubbing. When you scrub your hands, that's why we tell you to scrub your hands for 15 seconds, sing happy birthday.
Oh, so
or
rubbing them together,
the
not necessarily using a scrub brush or anything like that.
Yeah, rubbing that. Well, when you wash your hands, you want to scrub them. If you used a scrub, I mean, you don't have to use a scrub brush if you want to, but if you used a washcloth, that would probably be more effective than just washing your hands, but that's impractical.
Right.
You're not going to tell somebody to carry a washcloth with them all day and into the bathroom and into the store, you know, where you just happen to be going to the bathroom.
Right.
But if you're in the store and you need to go to the bathroom, it's a really good idea to scrub your hands after you went to the bathroom there.
Okay.
So, but scrubbing them, you want to scrub for at least 15 seconds and you want to get in between your fingers and you want to scrub and you want to provide some friction and that brushes the bacteria off. If you have foot fungus or you have armpit odor, right?
Mm.
Take the washcloth and scrub your feet. And again, use soap. It's nice if you use an antimicrobial, like if you want to use a tea tree oil soap. I don't recommend using a chemical antibiotic or antifungal soap, but using something with tea tree oil in it can be just fine. And you don't have to. You can just use soap. But take a washcloth with a that's got a little texture to it and scrub your feet, scrub between your toes, and scrub your armpits. People don't always do that. They don't. They a lot of people don't use a washcloth to in the shower.
Mm.
And a very simple thing to have less armpit odor is to take a washcloth, put soap on it, and scrub. And scrub for a few seconds, and you're going to scrub away a lot of bacteria. And then you don't have as much odor stuff going on.
You got me one of those scrubby things.
Okay, those are interesting.
What about those?
So shower puffs. Let's diverge to shower puffs. Yeah, yeah, that's the
it's a scrubby thing.
That's what the cosmetic term for those shower puffs. Let's talk about shower puffs for a second.
Mm-hmm.
So I have bad news for you.
Why?
Shower puffs are pretty unsanitary.
Why?
Well, because you use them, and you don't tend to wash them. And
I rinse mine out every time I use it.
Yeah, that's good. And you rinse it out as best as you can, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, the nature of the shower puff is it has a lot of crevices.
Oh, yeah, it does.
That's
why it scrubs so well.
A lot of twists and turns, and it has mesh, and it holds the soap in it.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do with the washcloth? The washcloth, I grab it every week and wash it. Some people wash their washcloths. I mean, he's always throwing the washcloth in the wash. It goes in the wash, and then it goes in the dryer. So your washcloth, even if you use it a few times, it's going to go in the washer and dryer, and it's going to kill all the microorganisms on it. It's been found that shower puffs harbor yeast in particular. They tend to harbor fungus because they're damp and moist, and they don't really dry well because of their shape. So shower puffs are something, it really pays to turn them over pretty frequently. You know?
Or maybe you should just throw them in the washer every once in a while.
Well, I don't know
once a week.
I don't know how they would fare because they're plastic.
Well, they'd wash well. You just have to dry them in the air.
Right, maybe. And if you put something antimicrobial like tea tree oil in them, you could do that. And that would be another reason to use tea tree oil soap.
Well,
with
I also have a little thing of tea tree oil soap in the in the shower that I use. And
Yeah. But shower puffs of the things that, you know how they have those features sometimes about what's the unsanitary places in your bathroom? And one, like what has more germs on it, a washcloth or a shower puff? Shower puffs have a lot of germs on them, unfortunately. So I would recommend changing out if you like a shower puff, you want to change your shower puff. No longer than once a month and maybe less than that. They're not too expensive, so, you know, you can turn them over pretty much. All right, getting back to vitamin A and that keratosis pilaris. Like I said, if you scrub your arms and you scrub your legs, you might be less likely to have the keratosis pilaris. But you do have to look at your essential fatty acid and your vitamin A consumption and how well you're digesting stuff. Respiratory infections. So the immune system, first of all, vitamin A is a wonderful antiviral. One of the reasons that people who get measles go blind is vitamin A deficiency. So you're more likely to get blindness from. And one of the scary reasons why people want to vaccinate against measles is there is a risk of blindness. And so, because the measles can go to the eyes. But if you're vitamin A sufficient, that's much less likely to happen. So people in places where they don't have a lot of food and they have measles outbreaks, they're more likely to go blind. Whereas you see measles outbreaks here, it's much less likely to happen if the children are well-nourished. However, so the thing is vitamin A, and to an extent beta-carotene, but really more vitamin A, the real stuff, is antiviral. It promotes normal cell differentiation, but it also supports the immune system. So the immune system can fight when it has a lot more vitamin A on board. And one of the things that I recommend when somebody has a cold, they're trying to kill off a cold that's just happened, or they're trying to prevent colds, I'll have people do nice doses of vitamin A regularly. But if you have an acute, if you're already sick, then I'll have people do high doses of vitamin A along with other herbs and vitamins that fight infections for a few days. And, I mean, we're talking in the hundreds of thousands IU. And so one of the things that people get scared of is high doses of vitamin A that they say can cause liver toxicity. So if you took 300,000 IU every day for a month, that might cause some liver toxicity. But if you took 100,000 IU for a few days, it probably wouldn't. And so the liver, it takes a lot over a long period of time to cause liver toxicity. And the amount of vitamin A that's in most multivitamins, there's usually 5 to 10,000 IU of vitamin A in multivitamin doses, and that's not gonna hurt you. And so it's vitamin A more than beta-carotene that's going to fight acute illnesses.
Hmm.
And so that's what I tend to give people.
I have a list here of the top 10 vitamin A foods.
Yeah,
if
okay.
You'd like them.
All right. So for pregnant women, the vitamin A is most in demand in the last trimester. And so a lot of vitamin A is going to build skin and tissue and organs and eyes and all kinds of cool stuff in the baby. So it goes to the baby first. So the pregnant woman can get night blindness in the last trimester.
Really?
Well, yeah, because the vitamin A, everything goes to the baby first. That's
oh, okay.
Why. So
right.
Pregnant ladies should take more vitamin A in the last trimester. So five health benefits. It protects eye health, like we talked about. It protects mm-hmm. against macular degeneration, as we said before. And vitamin A is helpful for dry eye. That if there's vitamin A in eye drops, it can help just as much as other anti-inflammatory drops. It can be very nice. So that can be helpful. We already talked about how it can provide immune support. It can prevent and treat the common cold. It fights inflammation, as we talked about with the keratosis pilaris. And when you have less inflammation, you're less likely to get neurodegenerative disorders like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. We already talked about how it helps skin makes healthy skin growth, and it also how it helps protect against cancer. So adequate vitamin A can protect against prostate, breast, ovarian, bladder, oral, and skin cancer. So that's very nice. All right. So vitamin A can be really helpful. There's some great sources of vitamin A. So remember what I said, that animal protein is going to be more likely to have actual vitamin A in it, whereas plants are going to have beta-carotene and carotenoids. So beef liver has a lot of vitamin A because a lot of vitamin A is processed in the liver. So liver is going to have a lot of vitamin A in it. So whether or not, however you feel about eating liver, if you're going to eat liver, this is a situation where it's really good to get it as organic and grass-fed and helpful as possible, because the liver is extremely nutritious because a lot of vitamins go through. There are a lot of vitamins and wonderful nutrients happen in the liver. There's detoxifying enzymes in the liver, which you can benefit from, but there's also toxins in the liver. So that can be a problem. And depending where the cow lived and what the cow was given, if the cow was given a lot of drugs, their liver is going to be compromised, and there could be some drugs in the liver. And if the animal was eating non-organic feed that had pesticides in it, then there's going to be pesticides. There could be pesticides in that liver. So if you're going to eat liver, it should be from a grass-fed organic source. And then it's going to be helpful for you. And you are going to get a lot of vitamin A out of it. So in terms of beta-carotene, carrots, a cup of raw sliced carrots has 20 over 21,000 IU of beta carotene in it. It's pretty incredible that carrots, like when you look at carrots,
that's amazing.
I know, when you look at carrots versus other plant foods that have beta carotene in them, they pretty much rock. They're pretty much the whole show.
So eat your carrots and see the world.
Right. So we're talking a cup of carrots. So if you have raw sliced carrots, mm-hmm. I'm not sure how many actual carrots that is, how you can fit into it. It's going to be a couple.
It's going to be a couple of good sized ones, actually.
It's going to be two or three carrots.
You know, we probably have, I'm just thinking about what I put on our salads at night, and we probably have maybe a quarter of a cup on each salad.
Yes.
So
right, and then we have lots of other vegetables in it, and we're going to make it up with those other. We're going to get the carrot. We're also getting the carotenoids from all those leafy greens that we eat.
Right. Oh, I know. Yeah. I can see that. Yeah.
So a whole sweet potato has 18,000 IU. Think about that. That a cup of carrots, which is going to be maybe two carrots, versus a whole sweet potato. A whole sweet potato is pretty big.
It is.
So per unit,
pretty large.
Unit volume, you're not going to get as much beta carotene in a sweet potato as you are in a carrot.
But they taste good too.
Yeah, oh, sure. Well, you're still going to get some.
Yeah.
But I mean, so you might eat a whole sweet potato with your dinner. I probably wouldn't. I would probably eat half a sweet potato because it's too much for me.
Right.
But I would eat. I could eat a carrot, a whole carrot in my salad. That's easy to do. So calorie for calorie and unit volume for unit volume, carrots are higher in beta carotene.
I'm measuring carrots tonight when I make them in a salad. Right. I'll tell you. I'll bet it's somewhere around 2 tablespoons.
So a cup of kale,
maybe a quarter cup,
has 6,700 IU. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of less than of beta carotene specifically. It's kind of less than carrots per unit volume. Which doesn't mean don't eat kale. Like I said, kale has that lutein in it, which is very good for your eyes. That's what makes kale yellow. So, you know, when kale, because kale underneath the green, it's yellow. Because when you leave, you ever notice that
you leave it for too long, it turns yellow.
That's right.
Yellow.
Yeah. So that's because it's high in lutein. And lutein is this amazing carotenoid that helps with your eye health. Hmm. So don't stop eating kale. Kale's very nutritious in a lot of different ways. And just because it's lower in beta carotene than carrots doesn't mean you shouldn't eat it. And spinach has less beta carotene in a per unit volume than kale. It's only got 2,800.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And however, romaine lettuce, check it out. Romaine lettuce has, it's in between kale and spinach. So if you think romaine is inferior to kale, it's quite a good thing to eat. After all, it's got a lot of beta carotene in it.
Romaine, of all things. I would not have guessed that.
Then if you look at some fruits, so apricots, one apricot, that's pretty decent for a little fruit that it has 674. I mean, look what color it is. That's why it has that beta carotene in it. A cup of broccoli. So now we're getting into the triple digits instead of the quadruple digits. And, you know, sweet potatoes and carrots, they're up in the five digits.
One thing I want to mention here, too, is they're mentioning all these things as being raw.
Yes, they are.
So if you cook them, obviously you're doing something.
I don't know about that. That's one cup raw because that's how much volume it takes up. If you take a cup of raw broccoli and you cook it, it's going to take up less space and it's going to be less volume.
So this is
something else to point out, and that's that carotenoids and vitamin A are more bioavailable when you cook the item than the beta carotene is more bioavailable in carrots and cooked carrots than it is in raw carrots.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So that's why it's good to eat both raw and cooked food. That really, even in the summer, we should be having a stir fry a couple times a week.
Yeah.
Because the carotenoids, you actually get more, the carotenoids become more bioavailable when you cook things. So when you make soups and stews, and you eat the cooked vegetables in there, carotenes are more bioavailable. So, you know, lycopene, right? Lycopene is a carotenoid that's very high in tomatoes. So this is tomato time because the tomatoes are fabulous right now. And so please do enjoy some of your tomatoes raw because they're super delicious that way. But also make a sauce, cook them. You did that lovely meal. What was it, Saturday night when you made that chicken with the pesto?
Oh, I did
on it?
A pesto chicken thing, and I actually cut tomatoes and put them in with the at the very end. You put those in because you don't want to cook them for very long because they cook very quickly.
That's true. Having said that, if you did cook them long and they came out a little bit stewed, the longer you cook them, the more bioavailable the lycopene is. Yes. So do you know, if you want to get lycopene, so lycopene is anti-cancer. It's particularly good for preventing prostate issues and prostate cancer. So do you know what the best source of lycopene is?
No. I'm about to learn, though.
Pasteurized tomato juice.
Well, because why pasteurized?
Because it's
cooked. It's been cooked up to 200 degrees.
Yeah,
right?
Not quite 200. Pasteurization is not 200 degrees. It's
just
not boiled.
It's just under.
Yes, it's right. So because it's been pasteurized, that makes the lycopene more bioavailable. Mm. So that's why it's good to eat raw. And because when you eat raw foods, you have the you're going to get the probiotics and you're going to get enzymes. Enzymes tend to degenerate in heat. So you're going to get enzymes and you're going to get certain nutrients that fare better when the foods are raw. And you're going to get you get enzymes and probiotics. That's the big thing, the big difference between eating raw versus cooked foods. When you eat cooked foods, you're going to get the carotenoids. There's certain items that are more bioavailable when it's cooked.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And I think that's very simply because you're distressing. We don't have cellulase in our bodies. Cellulase is an enzyme that breaks up cell walls. And cellulose is what's in cell walls. And all of the cells in plants have cellulose in them. So cellulase is an enzyme that breaks those down. So animals that are mostly vegetarian have cellulase in their guts. We don't. So when you cook vegetables, you distress the cell walls and it makes them so that they break more easily if you chew them and when they're knocked around in our digestive systems. So you're going to open up the cell walls a little bit more and you're going to just make all those nutrients more bioavailable. So that's what that's about. So you are going to get some vitamin A in things like butter, eggs, winter squash. Winter squash is, if you eat a cup of winter squash, it's not that high in beta carotene.
Yeah, look at that. One cup of cubed winter squash is 514, 10%.
Then let's get to cantaloupe. Quite impressive. Hmm. Yeah, a little bit of cantaloupe goes a long way. You're looking at 2,000 IU, so over 2,000 IU. And peppers. Peppers are pretty amazing. Sweet red peppers, because they have a lot of carotenoids, and they also happen to be high in vitamin C. Tuna, that tuna I ate last night, that tuna, and it has a lot of vitamin A in it, too. So, the tuna you're gonna get in the thousands. That's very good. And a mango. So the colored fruits that are orangey tend to have a lot of beta carotene in them. So cantaloupe, mango, apricots, they're gonna be really, and papayas, they're all gonna be pretty high in vitamin A in beta carotene, sorry. So like I said, the animal foods are gonna tend to be higher in vitamin A, and the plant foods are going to be high in beta carotene. So that's why carrots are considered to be the number one source of vitamin A, but it's in the form of beta carotene, and you have to have a well-functioning digestive system to absorb it. So, you know, what it gets back to is eating a variety of foods is going to get you your vitamin A.
You know, I'm bouncing around from site to site here, and here it shows sweet potato, 180 calories worth of sweet potato.
Mm-hmm.
It's 214% of your vitamin A.
Okay, but what does that mean?
I don't know. That's
200% are very interesting, but that's 214% of the RDA. What's the RDA?
Right.
And your RDA for vitamin A, I'm not sure what I don't know off the top of my head. What is your RDA for vitamin A? So the RDA for vitamin A is going to be it's actually like that 3000 IU. So you said 180 calories of sweet potato has 214% of the RDA. So that's going to be 6000 IU, but it's going to be in the form of beta carotene. So I don't know if they use those interchangeably. So that's interesting. So that's your RDA of vitamin A. Right. So, interesting.
Yeah. There's other stuff here, too, that we haven't mentioned, too. Mustard greens, collard greens, beet greens also.
Well, all of your greens are going to have beta carotene in them. All of your greens are going to have beta carotene in them. So, they're all going to be good sources of, they're going to be source of carotenoids, which, as I said, you're going to have to, you're going to have to convert to vitamin A. And as long as you have a good functioning digestive system, it's going to help you to do that. All right. So that was vitamin A. And so let's get into some B vitamins here. So B vitamins are fun. They're good for you. What a silly thing to say. So B vitamins are lovely, and there's a lot of them that are in the B vitamin family, and they're all put into the same group because they do a lot of similar things. They have similar things that they do, and then there are specific ones of them do. So for example, so vitamin B1, also known as thiamine, B1 and B2 are both, I should say B1, B2, and B3 are all part of the electron transport chain. So the electron transport chain is an energy system in all of the cells in your body. You have these energy centers in your cells called mitochondria, and the mitochondria are basically the energy centers inside the nuclei of your cells. They have the electron transport train going on in there where this chain passes electrons from molecule to molecule, causing a chain reaction that gives you energy. And vitamin B1, B2, and B3 are all involved in this chain reaction. So if you're low in any of those, you're not going to produce energy in all of your cells as well. Coenzyme Q10 is part of the system as well. And coenzyme Q10 is something else that runs the electron transport chain. So that's why if you're low in any of these things, you're going to have low energy. Conversely, people take B vitamins as supplements to help to increase their energy. That's something that's thought of to do. And coenzyme Q10 can also be energizing. And so you give CoQ10 to help the heart because the heart has very high energy cells. The heart is always moving. It's always pumping. There are cells in your body that rest and then do stuff. They rest and they do stuff. So your skin cells are not super high energy cells. A muscle cell, a skeletal muscle cell, if you're sitting around and not moving, skeletal muscle isn't doing too much stuff. But when you start moving, of course, the muscle cell is going to be very active. And, you know, you need coenzyme Q10 for your muscles to function well because they're moving you around. They're moving you around. They're holding you up. They're helping you walk. They're helping you just do all kinds of stuff. The heart is always beating. It is beating even when you are sleeping. So it's a very high energy cell. It needs lots of B vitamins. It needs lots of CoQ10. It needs carnitine. It needs all of the things that keep those cells going 100% of the time. If you're deficient in any of those nutrients, the heart won't work as well. And if you're an athlete, you might be more likely to deplete some of those nutrients. So your B vitamins and your CoQ10, you might deplete them more rapidly if you're an athlete. And that might make it a good idea, depending on how you eat, to supply some of those things and supply some of those things as a supplement. Anyway, so B vitamins. So the first one, B1, thiamine, helps with normal nervous system function. It's part of the chain reaction that happens to give you your action potentials. If you don't have adequate B vitamins, your nerves won't function as well. Sensory as well as motor. So you won't move as well and you won't feel stuff as well. And so when you have deficiencies in B vitamins in general, you can tend to get what we call paresthesias, changes in sensation. So B1 is found in a lot of foods. They're in lentils, they're in whole grains, they're in pork, and they're found in meats, but they're also found in vegetarian sources, in sunflower seeds and peas. They're also found in dairy, cauliflower, spinach, legumes. So there are some B vitamins in leafy greens. So if you eat a large variety of good food, you're going to find that you're going to get more B vitamins. You're going to get more B vitamins in general. Vitamin B1, there's a special form of vitamin B1 called benfotiamine. And I've heard it pronounced a few different ways, and I don't know if that's exactly how you pronounce it. Anyway, benfotiamine is something that's been studied to help regulate blood sugar. And B vitamins in general also help to regulate blood sugar. They're part of, you know, they're part of metabolism of sugar, and they're part of, you know, glycogen storage and usage of sugar. And as I said, moving it on to the electron transport chain. So benfotiamine is a specific one that can help to reduce the need for insulin and also to measure, to regulate blood sugar. Then there's riboflavin. That's vitamin B2. Once again, it's a key player in the electron transport chain that we already talked about. It's in fortified cereals, which I'm not a big fan of.
Fortified cereals.
Yeah.
Well, how do they do that?
Okay. Well, that's a story. So anyway,
is that another show?
So what they do with wheat, when they make white flour, what they do is they strip out, when you take away the bran, there's all the B vitamins are in the bran. They're not in the starch that's in the wheat. So when you have white flour, it's depleted of a lot of nutrients, going to be depleted of all the things you need to digest it.
Because they're stripping all the outsides of the wheat kernels, right?
That's right. So you're taking away the bran, and that's where the B vitamins and the magnesium are. And you need B vitamins and magnesium to process the starches and to process sugar as well. And so what they have to do is when they process flour like that and take out all the vitamins, they have to put them back in. So they put in synthetic forms of B1, B2, B3, and folic acid. Yep.
Ew.
That's how that works.
Yeah.
Yes. So that's why it says...
That gets a big thumbs down and an ew.
So that's why it says fortified cereals here. And it is in fortified cereals. It's true. But it's also in milk and eggs. It's in salmon, beef, spinach, and broccoli. Spinach.
Yep,
they're big on spinach at this site.
How about sardines? We had a caller call from Wyndham. John from Wyndham was talking about sardines. He loves the sardines, has them every day.
Well, sardines,
that would be a fish.
I don't know specifically. It's a fish, so it's going to have a lot of good stuff in it. It's going to have essential fatty acids. The neat thing about sardines is you eat the bones. As long as you are a person, when you eat your sardines, you also eat the bones. But the bones are soft enough in sardines when they're the way that they're prepared. When you can sardines, you can eat the bones. You're going to get all the nutrients that are in the bone. So anything that builds a bone, you're going to get trace minerals as well as calcium, magnesium from eating sardines, which is very nice. And sardines, of course, have protein in them, and they're high in essential fatty acids. I'm a fan. If you like the taste of canned fish, I'm a fan of the occasional canned fish because it's easy protein. If you don't mind taking stuff out of a can, the thing to do is to get something like chunk light tuna.
Mm-hmm.
If you get canned salmon, it's so easy. It's usually wild-caught salmon.
Yeah.
And you get your essential fatty acids and all the nutrients we're talking about here, like your vitamin B2.
Yeah.
If you can get canned mackerel, you can get canned sardines. And the thing about the little tiny fish, like I said, you're eating the bones. So you're getting, you know how
right.
we are always telling you to eat bone broth?
Right.
Well, you're going to eat little sardine bones, and those sardine bones are going to give you all the minerals.
Well, he likes the sardines and hot mustard sauce,
that's
too.
That's fine. Yeah, that's
just
really
nice.
Good.
Sounds good.
Right. So that's nice. I mean, and mustards, again, mustard is going to have some nice nutrients in it, too. Mustard, getting back to detoxifying compounds like in the cruciferous vegetables, and mustard's one of those. So riboflavin, the neat thing about riboflavin is that riboflavin, vitamin B2, often people who get migraines don't have enough vitamin B2 on board. And so high-dose riboflavin is used to help to prevent and treat migraines. Well, really to prevent migraines. We give it in a much higher dose than the RDA. So where your vitamin B1... you know, your RDA is only 1.1 milligram, and your RDA for B2 is 1.3 milligrams. We often will give doses as high, and you should talk to your doctor before you start taking this. You should talk to a doctor or a naturopath before you take this. But what we usually give is in the hundreds of milligrams range of riboflavin to help people prevent migraines. And it seems to work really well. You give that with magnesium, and it's a treatment for migraines. So riboflavin is kind of special to me because it can do that for you. B3 also supports cellular energy production. It's also known as niacin. And it has a few different forms. It has straight up niacin. And if you take too much niacin, you can get this flushing reaction. Niacin, if you take enough of it, can help to lower cholesterol. But the amount that you have to take will often cause flushing. And sometimes we'll use no-flush niacin, which doesn't always work as well as straight-up niacin. So it's kind of an issue. And some people will take their niacin along with an aspirin to prevent the flushing. Niacin in addition to helping to support blood sugar regulation and cellular energy, it specifically helps with cardiovascular health. And you can get it in beef, poultry, and fish, and as well as whole grains, and also peanuts and lentils. So legumes are going to be a source of niacin for you. Pantothenic acid, also known as vitamin B5, it's in plant and animal foods. Again, it helps to support cellular energy production. People who have adrenal fatigue, it helps to support the adrenals, and it's something we'll often give to people who are tired. And again, it's in organ meats, it's in egg yolks, it's in whole grains, and it's in some nice fatty things like avocados and cashews, and also in your legumes as well, in your peanuts and lentils. It's in brown rice, broccoli, and milk. So it's really helpful for you too. I will often turn to pantothenic acid when a person is tired, and if I think that their adrenals are a little off. Then there's B6. B6 is super important. It's involved in a lot of reactions in your body. It's a cofactor for detoxification. It's also a cofactor for neurotransmitters. So you need B6 to make good serotonin. So if you don't have enough B6, you might be depressed. B6 is one of the vitamins that's part of the methylation pathway. So, and the methylation pathway is part of how you make your neurotransmitter. So that's where you process your folic acid and you process your vitamin B12. So B6 is a cofactor there. It's also a cofactor for converting homocysteine down to cystathionine, cysteine, and glutathione. So that's another way that it's important for detoxification. So anyway, homocysteine is something that it's a really good idea for you to talk to your doctor about testing. Some people have high homocysteine. When your homocysteine is high in your blood, it can cause increased coagulability, which means that your platelets can stick together more readily, and it's more likely to cause those platelets to stick to the inside of your arteries and cause them to block up. So homocysteine, when it's high, it increases inflammation in the cardiovascular system. And also, if your homocysteine is high, it means that you're not converting it well down to other detoxifying amino acids like cystathionine and cysteine, and finally to glutathione. And so vitamin B6, B12, and folic acid are all important for that conversion process. Vitamin B6 has an active form called pyridoxal 5-phosphate. It's pyridoxine in its unconverted form, and then it's pyridoxal 5-phosphate in its active form. And so we will tend to give, if people have high homocysteine, we tend to give pyridoxal 5-phosphate for that. It needs to metabolize glycogen. So again, if you're an athlete, it's an important one. And that's why I'm wondering, now I'm really looking at all this thinking that if you're an intense athlete, taking a B-complex is a good idea.
Yeah, I would think it would be.
Yeah, that it might give you more. If you're like late in the season, like we are, and you're like, whoa, I'm doing like a long run, I'm doing a lot of training, and I'm not getting so much rest, and I haven't quite backed it down yet. I'm wondering if I need to go back to taking some B complex.
Yeah, I seem to remember way back in the day when I was, you know, playing the old bicycle racing game, I was definitely taking B supplements.
One of the things you find is when you take a B complex, you get a stomach ache. So one of the issues there is some B vitamins can be irritating to your stomach, unfortunately. So one way around that is to swallow your B vitamins with ginger tea. The other thing is to take a food-based B complex. So if it's complexed with foods, there are some brands that are complex with foods and they're not the synthetic forms of the vitamins, so they hit your stomach a little easier.
Yeah.
Yeah. So B complex is a good thing. And then biotin, that's another one. Biotin is high in brewer's yeast. It's also in strawberry. Maybe that's why I like strawberries so much. They have a lot of biotin in them. So biotin helps to support healthy hair, both in the structure of the hair as well as the structure of the hair follicles. And this doesn't have anything to do with male pattern baldness. Male pattern baldness is genetic. It's not a whole lot you could do about it. I mean, you could try. There are some things you can do. I mean, you can treat it, but the genetic predisposition is you get to be a certain age, and sometimes that age is 17, you start losing your hair.
Yeah.
And it's just genetic, and it's not a predictor for health or virility or anything like that. It's just a genetic. It's a weird thing. I don't know why it happens, because we have hair places where you have hair on your bodies, there's a reason why you have hair there. Mm. It's protective. Mm-hmm. So you have hair on your head to protect your head.
Right.
That's why, you know, people who do the, you know, men who do the cue ball thing.
Yeah.
It's kind of seen as bad A.
Yeah.
Because.
Why?
Well, because hair is there to protect your head. And you're like, yeah, I'm a big guy. I don't need to have hair. I can just let my head just stick out without any protection
why?
On it. Yeah. So it makes you seem more bad A. Yes. I don't know if I can say the A word.
No, we probably should be careful
yes.
about that.
So, and you're basically supposed to have hair, and yet there's this genetic predisposition towards male pattern baldness. And so there's not a whole lot you can do. I mean, you might be able to get some back by doing extra biotin, but if you're a person, like if you're having a nutritional issue or a stress issue, and that's why you're having thin hair, or you're having hair coming out, biotin can be helpful. I take biotin because I've never been entirely happy with my hair. I think I don't have enough, and I am not crazy about my texture. And then as you get older, that becomes more of an issue. Folic acid, baby. So I've got to get through folic acid and B12, and then I have to go.
Okay.
So folic acid, really important. So you might have heard of the methyl tetrahydrofolate reductase path, MTHFR. That's a big thing. And if you don't have enough folic acid, then your methylation will be off. Again, very important in neurological development. You want to make sure that a pregnant woman has enough so that the nervous system develops well, or you can get neural tube defects. And you get folic acid from leafy greens. And, you know, again, asparagus, spinach, all of your leafy greens are going to be high in folic. It's called folic acid because fol means foliage. It's in leaves. So if you eat a lot of leafy greens, you're going to get your folic acid. And you're also going to get it from brewer's yeast. You can get it. It's going to be in the liver because a lot of that methylation stuff happens in the liver. It's in fortified stuff like orange juice. But guess what else? One of my very brightly colored friends, beets. So beets are going to be high in folic acid. I didn't even realize that. Maybe that's why I crave beets and beet juice.
Fran likes beets.
I love beets. Yeah, beets are my friends. Mm. Also, dates. Want a date?
A date?
And avocados.
We could do a date.
Do you know what, you know how much one, you know how much, how much is in one avocado's number? You know what avocado's number is?
No.
It's one guacamole.
Oh, God.
That's only for you science geeks out there. All right. And then vitamin B12. So but folic acid, if you have trouble converting it, your doctor can test you for this. And then you might fare better if you took a converted form of folic acid like L5-MTHF, 5-methyl tetrahydrofolate, which is folic acid that's already been converted if you have a defect in the converting system. And that's something that your doctor can work out with you. Vitamin B12 as well. People, again, it's part of the energy systems of the body. And it is good for a healthy red blood cell. And folic acid as well. Folic acid and B12. If you have deficiencies in either, it will affect your red blood cell formation. And what you tend to get when you're deficient in B12 and or folic acid is big cells that are low in hemoglobin. So when you have a macrocytosis, when the cells are large, you'll have a measure called your MCV, your mean corpuscular volume, that will be high. Anyway, what your doctor will tell you is you have big cells and that you have, but you're anemic, that you have, your hemoglobin is low and your cell count might be low. So you need B12 and folic acid to make proper red blood cells. If you're B12 deficient, it might just be that you're not eating it. It could be that you're malabsorbing. It could be that you're vegetarian. Or you could have a condition called pernicious anemia. B12 has to be absorbed along with the stuff called intrinsic factor that is made by the parietal cells of your stomach. And people with pernicious anemia can have antibodies to the parietal cells and also to intrinsic factor. You need intrinsic factor to carry B12 into the small intestine, where it will then be absorbed in the terminal ileum. That's the last part of the small intestine before it hits your large intestine. If you have inflammation in your small intestine, then you're not going to be able to absorb a lot of stuff, including B12. But if you have inflammation in particular in the terminal ileum, then you're really going to have a B12 problem. And the terminal ileum is a place that Crohn's disease often hits, whereas celiac disease tends to hit the proximal small intestine. So the proximal meaning closer to your stomach. So you tend to malabsorb calcium and iron there. But B12, so B12 is really important. And people who are a little B12 deficient, just because they're not eating enough, they could take a little B12. Sometimes they feel better. Sometimes people with nerve pain, we will give them B12 and it will help their nerve pain. So hopefully we gave you a good, so we only got through
We got
B,
through the B's.
A and B.
I think we have more shows ahead of us with more vitamins in line.
And I love talking about the B's. You know why?
Why? Because you're the queen bee.
Yeah!
Yeah, I know that. Yeah.
And that. And all it means is I like to make sure there's a B ride. But this week I'm going to make sure there's a C ride. And next week we'll talk about vitamin C. Okay?
There you go.
All right.
Perfect.
So you've been listening to Radio Naturopath here on WHUS 91.7 FM. I am Fran Storch, and you have been listening with my co-host, Ron Meniza.
Hello.
If you'd like to participate in the conversation about natural medicine, you can call us during the show at 860-486-9487. At any time, you can email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, check out our podcast at www.whus.org. You can go to the talk header and click on Radio Naturopath. You can also check out my Facebook page, Fran Storch ND, Naturopathic Physician, Radio Naturopath, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Fran Storch ND. Stay healthy, eat your veggies, and we'll see you next week with more Radio Naturopath here on WHUS 91.7 FM.